Good morning. Welcome to Focus. It's our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also happy to have back on the program once again in this hour, Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Every month on a Tuesday, she's on this program. We talk about things that grow in the home landscape. It's your opportunity to ask questions if you have a problem, maybe something left over from the last growing season. You still don't know what to do about it. We can try to help with that. You're thinking about a particular place in your yard and you'd like to have a recommendation for a plant for that spot. We can do that. People, I'm sure, are already thinking about the growing season ahead. So whatever questions that you have, you give us a call. We can talk about houseplant issues as well. Before we get going here with Sandy, we also want to remind you that we are here to raise money for the station. And that is important because a little over 40% of the budget for WILL, that's the money that pays for the programs you enjoy. That money comes from listeners. And right now, if you're not a supporter of the station, a financial supporter, we hope that you will change that status right now and either call or go online. The number to call, 217-244-9455. Or you can go to willpledge.org and make your contribution. And I'm also very happy to have here in studio with me this morning, Molly Delaney. She's our Education Outreach Director for WILL. She was here yesterday. It's always nice to see you because you do your work pretty much by going outside of the station. I hardly ever see you.
Two days in a row. This is extremely exciting for me. As David said, I'm here because I'm the Educational Outreach Director for the station, but more I'm here because I really enjoy Focus and I really believe in this program. You know, we're talking about gardening this morning and you have an opportunity to plant seeds here at the station and make them grow. Your contribution can help us continue great programs like you're about to hear. And just to share with you, Sandy Mason brought in all these fabulous catalogs, and I may be a little distracted because it's really hard for me not to look at these beautiful flowers and think wistfully of spring. But we're also here to ask for your donation. We want you to call in, make that pledge of support specifically to Focus. So call in during the show and let us know at 217-244-9455 or go online to willpledge.org and make a contribution. We want to hear from you this morning.
And need we remind you it's Valentine's Day, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
Come on, show us a little love, please. Okay, 333-9455 is the number if you want to call in on the show. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And you want to send us an email, you can do that too. will-talk@illinois.edu. Welcome back. Glad to have you here.
Hey, it's a great time to talking about gardening, don't you think?
Yeah, well, I think so too, because this is, you know, once you're in the season, you're dealing with stuff. Depending on what it is, you're sort of dealing with what's there. Well, now this is the time when you start thinking, you start to plan ahead. Now you should be thinking about what you want to plant. Well, you've got plenty of time to look through catalogs, look at different kinds of plants, decide what you really want. And that's what real gardeners are doing right now. They're going through the catalogs.
You know, this is my moment of just full optimism. Just full optimism.
And how long will it be before it's
gonna
completely
be
dashed?
It's going to be dashed probably July or August. But hey, this is the time of year where I think about all the great plants I might be thinking about planting, or maybe just sort of taking care of those issues. Maybe a certain plant needs to be divided because it just got too big. Yeah. This is that time when we can sort of start planning for those, because it really is one of those things, as you said, once you get into the gardening season, you're sort of on maintenance mode sometimes if we get into really drought or whatever. So it's kind of nice if you can sort of think about those ahead of time. And then when we do finally get into regular warm weather, you know, we can start dividing, certainly in April, we can start dividing all our perennials for the most part. You'd be thinking about, you know, reseeding a lawn. So April's not that far off.
Yeah. Well, so I've been thinking about the fact that now here this winter, it certainly has been warmer than average. Mm-hmm. And we've had a lot of days here where the high temperature was above freezing. And I'm looking around in my yard and the daffodils are getting jazzed and I've got snowdrops and things are definitely a little bit ahead of where they should be. And I'm starting to wonder now, if things really get going a little bit too early, then what happens if we suddenly really do get a cold snap, extended cold snap?
Right, right. And probably the big thing, if we stay into moderate temperatures or even average temperatures, you know, most of the plants will be fine. I mean, they can take some freezing. Probably the biggest thing is if we really start getting into those frigid temperatures, as in we start getting into the teens, you know, we had a couple nights there, it was like 9 or 10.
Yep.
You know, it's pretty cold. So if people still have some of those things out there, you know, snow is actually one of the best covers. So I know a lot of people aren't snow fans, but it really is one of the best covers for plants. So a good snowfall helps. It's good to have a few inches that helps to insulate them. They don't wake up quite as fast. So that would be a wonderful thing. If that isn't a real option for us, then certainly, you know, if you have shredded leaves or even some trimmings on your boxwood, whatever it is, you know, just sort of put some of that over the plants, that can help. So I think at this point we're okay, but the farther we get into spring, or closer to we get to spring, and if we get into those moderate temperatures and things start to wake up a little bit too fast, and then we get those cold temperatures, that's when we really start seeing damage. So we need to, you know, look for average. Go average.
All right.
Average doesn't always get the, you know,
that's
really
true.
Good.
You don't have one of those
press.
Big foam fingers that says,
let's
we're
be average.
Average.
Yeah. But right now we need average temperatures.
Okay.
Average.
We have someone calling in here, Mill Creek Valley, Indiana, on our toll-free line. We'll go right there. Hello.
Yeah.
Hi.
Okay. My question concerns ground covers around tombstones.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that periwinkle might do it, but when I got a description of periwinkle, it can go up to 6 inches. Then I thought violets, but I was told the violets will spread all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any recommendations?
So this is just something you're just trying to put around the tombstones just so they don't have to weed around them? Is that really kind of the option?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's kind of a tough one, to be honest with you. And you really want something that's short. You're not wanting anything that gets tall?
Yeah.
Okay. Because really, to be honest with you, something like daylilies would actually do well. But those are obviously going to get much taller, like one of the Stella d'Ora or Happy Returns, some of those that bloom. But yet, you know, they do a pretty good job of choking out grass around them. Because I will tell you, like periwinkle, that would work. It only gets about 6 inches when it's actually in flower. So, and then it kind of lays back down again. So 6 inches is probably the shortest you're ever going to find with any of the ground covers,
okay.
To be honest with you. That's probably going to be, but it will spread into the lawn area, and until it gets established, it's not going to choke out the grass. The grass will kind of creep into the periwinkle, I will tell you that.
Yeah.
So if there's any way, as far as anything taller, that's just not an option.
How about the violets? They seem to me to be pretty short.
And violets will certainly choke out other things. They certainly will move into the lawn area. So depending on how the cemetery. Folks feel about that.
Do you think that's bad?
Well, that's up to the cemetery people on how they feel about it. To me, it doesn't really worry me all that much when I see something like that growing in the lawn. It doesn't really bother me all that much. So it really kind of depends. But I think you need something that's really tight like that, like daylilies, like violets, something that's kind of tight that'll help to sort of not have the grass move into it. Because if you use English ivy or periwinkle or any of that kind of stuff, the grass will move into it. And then you have ground cover and grass.
Yeah.
Which isn't always a very nice look.
And you say the daylilies are not that short, are they?
No, probably the shortest ones you're going to find are probably 2 feet. You know, 18 inches to 24 inches is probably going to be as short as you're going to find on daylilies for the most part. But they do a really good job of sort of choking out everything else, and then you get the flowers, and then they could be, you know. But again, it depends on how the cemetery maintenance folks feel about that.
Yeah, well, that's me.
Oh, that's you.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? That's even easier. Have a discussion with yourself and see if that'll be okay.
Well, I've done that. What are the short daylilies? What brand?
Well, I really like one called Happy Returns. It's a yellow one, and it's a real clear yellow, so it's a very bright, cheery yellow, which I think would be fun. And it does rebloom, which is nice, and it's one of the shorter ones. So I think Happy Returns is a great one, and it's one that's readily available, and I just think it's just really a great plant. It's a really tough plant. It'll choke out the grass that's around it.
I could put that away at the back or in a corner. And now, are these things going to stand shade?
So this does have some shade? I should have asked that earlier.
Yeah.
Okay. They'll probably need at least 6 hours of sun to bloom well. They'll live in the shade, but they're not going to bloom well in the shade.
Yeah, but they'll do their job as ground cover.
Right. You just won't get much in the way of flowers.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a little, you know, you could even go with something like, if it's full shade, you could always go with hostas, and there's plenty of hostas out there. Of course, again, you have to look at the size. Some of them are going to get much taller than you might think. But
yeah, ours here at the house kind of spread.
Yeah, and they're nice in that they do a nice job in those shady spots, and they don't take a lot of care, so that would probably be a good one, too. So.
Yeah, and they're kind of tall, though.
Right. Now, there are some shorter ones, but then you're back to that, you know, depending on the price you want to pay for them. There are some short ones, but they're going to be a little bit more expensive, but probably back to that 18 inches to 24 inches.
Okay, now one more question, I guess one more. Am I going to have to get these happy returns for every tombstone?
Well, I guess that would be up to you, but I will tell you they do spread, and so if you don't mind doing it over several years, the clump will spread, and so you could easily divide them, you know, buy a few of them, and then in a year or so divide them, and then eventually you could have them around all of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they divide very easily, and they do a nice job from there, so that might help.
What time of year would I divide them?
Well, usually in April. Daylilies are pretty tough. You could actually get away with April, May.
Yeah.
That too much trouble.
Well,
okay. Well, have fun.
Glad to hear your optimism.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you for the call.
Good luck.
Other
folks are certainly welcome to call. We're talking this morning in this hour with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here on the program. We talk about lawn and garden care. And if you have a question about things that grow in the home landscape, you can call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You want to send an email, you can do that too. And that is will-talk. At illinois.edu. One of the things that I wanted to ask you about was the new zone map. There is now a new zone map. I'm looking at it here, and it looks like we here in Champaign-Urbana, in fact, almost the entire northern half of the state, except for the way the northwestern corner, they say is now all, what is this, zone 5B. Mm-hmm. Is that a big change from what it was before? What were we before?
Well, for us right here in East Central Illinois, and actually Central Illinois for the most part, didn't really change on that all that much. We used to be right in the center of 5B, and now we're just sort of lapping at the edges of Zone 6 and 5B. So we're still in 5B, but now we're at the edge of 5B. So it actually has Zone 6, which would be the warmer zone, has actually moved north.
And they're now, so not too far to the south of us, so now Edgar and Douglas counties, and looks like some of Sangamon County and points south, are now in Zone 6.
Right. So they did see a change. But, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day in that, actually, it was a state climatologist, Jim Angel. We were talking about the new map and all this stuff. And I said, you know, as gardeners, we always have zone envy. So we've always tried Zone 6 plants anyway. So, you know, now we just have more reason to try Zone 7 plants because we're so close to Zone 6. We might as well try Zone 7. So we've always stretched the limits as gardeners. So this just gives us more incentive to stretch the limits.
Well, now there is just the tiniest bit now of Southern Illinois in Zone 7.
See?
I think
more
though,
incentive.
That's pushing it.
More
that's because that's like way I'm down in the southern tip of the state
David.
Is Zone 7. Okay.
So you just try, try. We always want plants that are in another zone.
Well,
always.
Now we've talked about the fact that there are that a lot of the things that we plant here as annuals, in other places, if it's warm enough, they're actually perennials.
Sure, sure.
So does it seem likely to you that maybe some of those things that have not, we've had to say, okay, you want to plant those things, but they're not going to be winter hardy, that some of those things are actually, we're going to get to the point where some things will actually overwinter, or is that still not?
Well, there might be something. Right offhand, I can't think of, because things like geraniums and some of those, they still need, you know, pretty warm temperatures. They're probably more of that Zone 7, Zone 8. But there may be, very well be, times when people can get away with it. But I think probably what we'll see is things like butterfly bush might be a really good example. You know, typically for us, it's always acted like, it's really a shrub. If you go into southern states, it's more of a shrub around around here, it's always been it dies to the ground and then just comes back. And now I think we're probably going to see like butterfly bush. It'll probably stay as a shrub. You probably maintain that woody tissue and not die to the ground. I think we're going to see those kinds of things, or we typically might think of them actually dying to the ground and, you know, not acting like a shrub. So I think we're going to see those things. And once in a while, people may notice. I've had people tell me sometimes that they've had actually had gladiolas over winter. You know, some of those things are still probably more zone 7, zone 8. So we're still looking at, you know, more southerly temperatures. But, you know, I think it's one of those things that you just try and then we're just excited when it happens.
You are always optimistic, aren't you?
I am always optimistic. This is a great time. I look at these catalogs and all these beautiful, beautiful flowers and wonderful vegetables. And what's not to be optimistic about?
It's much less exhausting than weeding, too, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, it is the most hopeful time of year, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there are, okay, so if things are going to grow in the in the home landscape, in the yard, they're going to need some basic care. You're going to have to water them. You're going to have to fertilize them. You're going to have to talk nicely to them. Otherwise, they won't work. Well, ladies and gentlemen, public broadcasting is just the same.
What a great
thing. We need fertilizer. We need water. We need love and attention. And of all the days that you're going to give us love and attention, it's Valentine's Day. How could you possibly resist? We even, you know, if you call in with a pledge, we will send you a bumper sticker that says, I love NPR.
With a heart.
With a heart. You can slap that on your bumper or on yourself. It doesn't matter, you know. The important thing is that you're going to help us out with our support goal. And this is now the last day. We'll be doing this for a while. The last day that we'll be asking for support. And if this has been on your to-do list...
Do it.
Do it.
Do it.
Right now. Yeah. Molly Delaney is here with me.
Yeah. I just want to say, where else can you hear about zone envy? You know, every time I listen, it's something new.
This is it.
And we were just discussing earlier how we've had callers, you know, just today we've had callers from Terre Haute. We just had a caller from Mill Creek Valley, Indiana. Yesterday we had a caller from the Quad Cities. We're getting pledges from all over. We want to hear from you. So if you are listening remotely, if you're listening on the web, go to willpledge.org and let us know that you want to know more about zone envy and you enjoy programs like the one you're hearing today. We love to hear from you. We want to hear what you like. We just want you to support the station. So again, 217-244-9455. Please make that pledge of support today.
Yeah. We, as America, talk about far-flung correspondence here. We have a call from Paris.
Excellent.
It's Paris,
so
Illinois.
Romantic. Still romantic.
Well, okay. They do have that model of the Eiffel Tower there.
Yes.
It's quite nice. Well, let's talk with them. Paris, line number one. Hello.
Well, happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you from Paris. Thank you.
We all love you. Okay, I have two questions. One is, why do they keep telling us that we should not put citrus peelings in compost?
You know, it's mainly because it's not that it's bad. It's not that it's bad. You're not going to hurt anything. It's just they never decompose. I shouldn't say never. They're very, very slow to decompose. I put citrus peels in mine, but I always try to, like, you know, cut them up as much as I can. It just takes them a long time to decompose. So you're not going to hurt anything. It's just you're probably, when everything else is decomposed, you'll still find a few citrus peels in there. But then I just throw them back in, and eventually they decompose.
Well, okay, because I've been doing it. I've just been putting the peelings right under plants where you can't find them.
Yeah.
And then eventually they just, soon I don't see them anymore.
There you go. Out of sight, out of mind. But it's not that it's hurting anything. It's not that it's going to hurt the compost or
anything. Okay, another question, Creeping Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
I have looked at all my books about finding Creeping Charlie, what it looks like. I think I know what it looks like. Is it a mallow? Is it called, in my book, I have something called cheeses.
No.
Is it all of those cheeses?
No. No, they're... Yeah,
I don't know what Creeping Charlie is.
Yeah, it has a leaf that kind of looks like a mallow, kind of has that kind
of a little bit of leaf.
Yeah, but it's not. It's actually in the mint family, and so it actually smells like mint, and it has a flower
What family is it in if it's not a mallow?
It's a mint. It's in the mint family.
A mint family?
Yes, mint, as in spearmint and all those mints.
Yes, uh-huh.
Lemon balm.
Okay.
So it's actually in that family. And if you know anything about mints, they tend to all be running all over the place. So that, but it's very low to the ground, as you know. And I'm sure there would probably be plenty of people that would love to give you all the Creeping Charlie they have, just so you know what it looks like from now on.
Well, it's green.
Not a mallow.
It is green, and it does keep things.
You're absolutely right.
See, so I can't see why I should worry about it because it's green.
It's in the eye of the beholder, believe me. So it's
right.
Truly, if it works for you, then I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, I don't worry about it. I just cut it with the grass.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's so it's a mint.
Well, yes, it's in the mint family.
And I should look under, but I can't find the word Creeping Charlie anywhere.
Look under ground. Look at ground ivy. That's the other name for it.
Ground ivy.
Yep.
Okay.
Ground ivy or Creeping Charlie, and a lot of times on, especially on herbicides and stuff, they'll list it as ground ivy.
Okay.
So look for that.
I will do that. Thanks a lot.
Sure.
But it does look a little bit like a mallow.
The leaf kind of does, but it's smaller. Yeah, the leaf does, but it's smaller.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Well, thank you.
You have enlightened me.
Great. I'm glad.
On Valentine's Day.
All right. From Paris.
For 30 years now, we've been in the enlightenment business. That's what we try to do. The thing about Creeping Charlie, as she says, it's green, and it has a nice little purple flower, and you can mow it. The problem is that it'll go where you don't want it. It won't just stay in the places where you think you're okay with it. It'll
right.
go everywhere. And if it gets into your flower beds and things, then that's when it's going to be a problem.
Or your strawberry bed.
That's a problem I've had where it actually got into my strawberry bed one time, and then that's when I was like, okay, that's it. You know, you get it. Got to get rid of it then. But,
okay.
You know, and a lot of times, you know, it'll grow in shady, dry spots when just about nothing else will grow. It's like the only thing that will survive that. So,
all right. Let us continue. We'll go to next, Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hi. There's something that's green right now, and that's garlic mustard.
Yeah.
And also I've seen, we were out walking in one of the U of I forestry areas looking for owls yesterday, and there was before the snow, and there was garlic mustard and also poison hemlock, and I was just like, oh, dang. But anyway, my question is there a foolproof way to grow peppers? I haven't been able to grow peppers for years. The plants just kind of sit there and don't do much, and they get full sun, and they get watered when I water other things, and I'm wondering what it is I'm doing wrong, or whether other people have just had bad years with peppers. I'm about to give up on having them in my garden. You know, bell peppers.
Right, right. Well, last year actually was a pretty good year. Now, some years where it's cool, they don't do well. They're heat lovers, so peppers love heat. So we have to have those really, and once in a while we've had those summers where it just hasn't maintained itself. Actually, a couple of years ago, it was just too cool, and even the tomatoes didn't do all that great. So they need heat, so some of that we can't do a whole lot about. The other thing, too, is that, and again, last year wasn't bad, but some years we actually have, if it's too hot in the evening in particular, or if we get really hot, dry winds, the flowers will abort, and you won't get fruit then. But usually, once the temperature changes, then you start having fruit again. You start having the peppers again. So I would look at a couple things. I'm not sure where you're getting your plants. Just to make sure that you're getting really good quality plants. Or if
I usually buy them at FS or Prairie Gardens.
So I, you know, just always make sure you look for that. Don't put them in too early. They're heat lovers, so you'd want to wait till they're mid-May. So make sure you put them out there when it's nice and warm. And they really do like fertilizer or really high organic matter soils. So I would just make sure that you're adding compost when you're planting them. That can help. Also, once they get going, I would mulch them. If you can mulch them just to moderate the soil temperatures, that can help. So there's probably a few things, and some of it probably had to do with just the weather we were having. But last year was a pretty good year. So you should, and again, full sun, more sun the better, that kind of thing. And you may want to try some of the smaller varieties. Sometimes people have actually better luck with some of the smaller varieties. And the nice thing is there's a lot of small varieties now that are sweet. Not all the small varieties are hot peppers. So you might have actually better luck with some of the smaller ones that are still sweet.
Maybe it's my timing, but my soil, every couple of years, that area where the areas where I tend to put peppers ends up getting compost from the compost heap. And with regard to the orange peels, if anything isn't fully composted, either goes on, I have two compost piles next to each other. I just toss it over into the one that's active when I'm emptying one. Or if it looks kind of brown and okay, I just stick it in the garden and it...
They'll decompose.
Eventually, yeah.
Compost happens.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be.
That's what I say.
It's totally composted when I move it out of my pile. It just, you know, it just depends on what the choice happens to be. With regard to fertilizers, there's things that plants need besides the big three or four and, you know, the micronutrients and whatever. Are we depleting our soils of those things that aren't included in commercial fertilizers?
Well, I mean, I think one of the great things about being in Illinois, Indiana, Midwest for the most part is that we have great soil. I mean, we're just very, very fortunate. We have great soil. And so we have a lot of, there's a lot of buffering capacity in there, and the fact that there's generally a lot of nutrients. And the micronutrients, the plants need them, but they need them in small quantities. So usually it's not a huge deal unless it's on a one particular plant. Or if you have something like blueberries that need an acidic soil, and then they'll have nutrient deficiencies just because the pH is too high. So I know that's not – I think probably the big thing that we can always do as gardeners is that – and hopefully people are getting back to that more and more – is the whole idea of feeding the soil. Rather than always thinking about feeding the plant, let's feed the soil. And if you have good, healthy soil – high organic matter between 4% and 6%. You're adding compost. You're doing all the things. You have plenty of worms. Those kind of things. You're going to have happy, healthy plants. So if you can really think about the soil and how you're treating the soil and all that, rather than worrying quite so much on how much actual fertilizer, such as the inorganic type fertilizers that we put on, I think we're all going to be better off, including our plants.
In my garden, I have a mixture of perennials and annuals that I tuck in, and then some vegetables and herbs, the ones that I want to be able to go out and get directly from the garden and not have to go to the grocery store for it, and that I'm successful at, and that I don't have to compete too hard with the critters. It's getting pretty hard with the tomatoes. The squirrel's been eating the tomatoes before while they're still green, so I have to come up with a solution for that because I want tomatoes. But so I put the compost on top of the soil, but it only gets dug in if I'm digging up the bed, and I don't tend to do that around perennials.
But the worms will do that for you.
They will, okay.
Yep.
Well, I must say that I can see the difference between the areas where I've put compost and when occasionally when I do dig down deep to do something, I can see where the compost has not been. It's really heavy, and if it sits out in the sun, it turns into a rock. Whereas the stuff that has compost in it, it's just marvelous, and
yep,
it's been worth doing it. So I recommend to people to find a way,
yep,
to do it. Thanks for your help.
Very good.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. Here's
someone who called in with a suggestion, and maybe this applies specifically to people who are trying to grow peppers and tomatoes. They said you can try self-watering planters. I'm not quite sure what a self-watering planter is.
Well, I guess if you're going to do it in containers, you certainly could. They have them. They're not self-watering. As they don't go out and turn on the faucet or anything. If that's what you're thinking, David, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it's going to walk over there.
Turn on the faucet. Yeah, sorry, it doesn't work that way.
Okay.
Not yet. No, they actually have a reservoir in them underneath in the bottom of the container.
Oh,
actually,
okay.
A reservoir. And so you fill up the reservoir.
Okay.
And so that's the whole idea, is that you just continually fill up that reservoir. And so the water's always available to the plants. And they're really good. I really highly recommend it for people that are going to be doing, especially vegetables, but also flowers and stuff, in containers, because it really does give you that little bit of leeway. So if people want to try that, I think that's great. I'm not, you know, I think I would rather put them in a garden situation, but if you want to do them in containers, that's a good solution.
Okay. We have some other callers here. We'll talk with them in just a moment. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension. She's on the program every month. It's always on a Tuesday, so we can talk about lawn and garden care. And we'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
Today's programs are made possible by 10,000 Villages at 105 North Walnut in downtown Champaign. 10,000 Villages is celebrating 26 years of trading fairly in Champaign-Urbana, offering eco-friendly handcrafted decor and gift items from around the world. A gift from 10,000 Villages is a gift that gives twice.
We are really happy to have the support of 10,000 Villages, and there are a lot of other businesses that support us. And then also we have this wonderful partnership that we have going with the Common Ground Food Co-op that we have been talking about this week. And you know, there are a lot of businesses that are involved in what we do in WILL. And when I meet people, they comment on that. They say, you know, they patronize those businesses because of it. And the people who have those businesses, they say to us, hey, you know, that really does something, that mention on WILL. So we want to say to businesses that support us, hey, thanks very much. Now, this is one of the times we also want to thank and invite in individuals too, because individual support is just vital for the station. 43% of the money that it takes to run the station comes from listeners. And we can't rely on the same number of people over time, because the costs do go up to meet those costs. So that's why periodically we sit here and we say, hey, folks, if you're a listener, great. We also want you to be a supporter. You can call us. You can go online. Either way, this would be a great time to do as we're coming near the end of this little mini fund drive we got going here. 244-9455 is the number, and willpledge.org if you want to go online. Molly Delaney, our educational outreach director, is with us this morning to spend the 2 hours, both hours.
I am. And it's a day all about love. And so we're asking those listeners out there who love this show, who love the station, to give back. We had a listener who said that for many years they've enjoyed WILL programming for free, and it's time that I give back. Hearing it that it's the start of the pledge drive gave me the nudge that I needed. We're hoping that we can nudge you today to make that contribution in support of programs like this one. I don't know, you guys can't see Sandy, but this is an absolute joy to be in the studio with her, not just because I love gardening and flowers, but because she's kind of got this really effervescent personality that you just have to be happy. So I'm having a fabulous Valentine's Day here, and I hope that you are too. But we do want to hear from you. And again, that number to call is 244-9455, or you can go to willpledge.org and make that pledge of support today. Yeah. Again, you know, maybe you've already made a pledge. Why not show us a little more sweetness on Valentine's Day by just upping that pledge a little?
All right. Thank you. She does have a certain elfin charm.
Yes, she does.
I've always thought.
Elfin charm. Does that have anything to do with my height as well?
No, that's not a, not a short joke. I would never, never would I do that. I wouldn't do that. No. Sandy Mason is here. She's here once a month on a Tuesday. And the lines are full, so we'll continue to talk. We'll do as many as we possibly can. If you have gardening questions, give us a call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next is Urbana, line number three. Hello.
Yes, well, a little information that may please that lady who was asking about creeping Charlie. It was introduced as a ground cover, I think, in the 1800s, and I suppose it ranks with the introduction of velvet weed as a bad idea.
For some, I guess, yeah.
But what I was interested in, are there any new tomatoes that have resistance to, it's that late season fungal attack, starts at the base of the plant and works up.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any new ones in particular that are specifically for that, and I think that's the one disease that I think everybody ends up having or seems to end up having is that septoria, that late blight. A couple different actually leaf spot diseases that tomatoes can get, and you're absolutely right. So and unfortunately, it isn't usually listed on the plant. You know, it talks about verticillium and fusarium, and doesn't typically talk about leaf spot diseases. I don't know that there's a new one out on that. Probably, I'm trying to think if there's a fairly good list or not. I think Cornell actually keeps a fairly nice list on vegetable varieties and their disease resistance, so people might want to do a web search on that if that's a particular one. I've had actually pretty good luck. The one that I really like just for an all-around good tomato is a Big Beef, and I've had really good luck with that, not getting a whole lot of leaf spot diseases. But I think the other thing that has helped me immensely is just to give them more space. I think we just stuff way too many plants into one spot, at least I do, because, you know, I want all of them, of course. And I think just giving them, you know, in an area where I used to have 6 to 7 plants, now I have 4. So I give them a lot more space because it's that air circulation that really makes a big difference. So if those leaves can dry out, it helps immensely. So just, you know, spreading them apart, making sure that you cage them, again, so they get better air circulation. I think those kind of things can help. But it's a tough problem because anytime those leaves are wet for long periods of time, they get those leaf spot diseases, and it's a tough problem. So I'm sorry I don't have a really good answer for you, but maybe someone else has had really good luck with some of the other varieties.
Well, I didn't really have much trouble last year. I grow my tomatoes on a trellis rather than caging them, so they're really spread out.
Yeah, so that helps.
And then I sprayed with a fungicide.
Right, right.
And they were still green when it froze, but I gardened with a friend who has had cancer, and he's very much afraid of fungicide.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think it is one of those things that if you can, soon as it starts happening, and it tends to be always those lower leaves, they'll start getting a few little spots on them. If people can just take those off, just get them out of there, because that fungus is just going to continue, and it just works its way up the plant. So just being vigilant, that sometimes can really, really slow it down. And then making sure, of course, that you don't water at night, or, you know, trying to keep that foliage dry. Just don't even water the leaves. You know, water the plant, don't water the leaves, and that kind of thing can help too, but sometimes the weather doesn't cooperate with us. But it's really kind of a tough thing. Unfortunately, I found a lot of the some of the heirloom varieties have really had a tough time with some of the leaf spot diseases, I've noticed. So, you know, you may want to, you know, make sure that you have a number of varieties too. So,
well, I was using mostly Better Boys.
Yeah.
But
so those are good too.
So, last year I got compost from the compost, the landscape recycling, and I put down newspaper, and then I put a heavy layer of compost the entire length of the row, and I thought maybe that helped. I don't know.
Well, you know, certainly when the plants are healthier, that's certainly going to help.
It certainly conserved water.
Yeah, that certainly conserves water, you're right. And they have found that mulching, sometimes making sure there's not a lot of splashing, you know, that from the leaves, those kind of things can sometimes help too. So, yeah, that's a tough thing, that sometimes it's a weather issue that we just don't have a whole lot of control over. So, at any rate, let's think of ripe tomatoes. Yay!
Oh, I already am.
I know. Those store-bought ones are just not the same. I don't care what they say.
Okay.
Well,
thank you. To Robinson, this is our next caller, line 4. Hello.
Hello, Sandra.
Hi.
I have a couple of suggestions for the man in Mill Creek Valley, Indiana, and the tombstones.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is Lysimachia, also called Moneywort and Creeping Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very low-growing, clinging to the ground plant that sends out runners which root at the joint and has little tiny round beautiful green leaves, and in summer small bright yellow flowers, 5 or 6 petals, I've forgotten which. It can be mown over, so you can mow up to the tombstones but still have this ground cover underneath, which doesn't grow high enough to be cut off by the lawnmower.
Mm-hmm. And they actually do well in shade, so that would be a good option for him, too. So, yeah, good suggestion.
For the man's interest, if he's still listening, it's spelled Lysimachia, and it can be bought at big box stores like Lowe's, which I know exist in Indiana.
Yeah, no, good suggestion. That would work for him.
Okay. The second one is a garden pest of mine, commonly called barren strawberry, but it isn't a strawberry at all. It sends out stolons, which root again as they go, has strawberry-like leaves and strawberry-like flowers, except they're yellow, and it sets little tiny imitation strawberries, which only the birds will eat. That is not sweet. It can be mowed over. In fact, it lives in my lawn very happily.
Okay? Yeah, great.
Well,
hey, thanks.
Thank you.
And I think it, for those, if you get bogged down with the Latin name, I think if you just, if you're searching for this, you can look for Moneywort. Just put in Moneywort or Creeping Jenny. Now, I do hear, I find on the Forest Service, they list Moneywort as the weed of the week. So I don't know if that's an issue with that particularly being invasive or not.
It can spread.
It can. Okay, very good. Well, take that into consideration and keep an eye on it. Let's continue. We'll go to back to Paris for another Paris caller here, line one. Hello.
Hey, Sandy.
Hi.
Always enjoy listening to you.
Thanks.
I was online listening to an organic gardening program here a while back, and the speaker was ranting, basically, about using wood mulches. Now, I know the dyed mulches aren't real great because they're ground-up pallets, and it's like putting the y'all-come-for-supper thing for termites. But bark mulches, I've used them in the past, and I had too much issue with them. But he was basically saying that it was leaching nutrients out of the soil and him basically advising people not to even use it. He was just telling them to use compost, and that was it. And I was just curious to see what your opinion on that was, and I'll just listen to you offline. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks. And actually, that's a really good question about the whole idea of using wood mulch. So I think probably there's a few issues here. If it's fresh, as in it was a live tree yesterday, and now you're putting it down as mulch, probably not a particularly good idea. You'd want to compost it first. And usually we say at least 3 months. So if you can just put it somewhere and let it compost for at least 3 months, because that's really when it's robbing the nutrients. So all those things, the bacteria and stuff that are actually decomposing that fresh wood, actually can take nitrogen from the soil, from the plants. And so there can be an issue. It's generally only an issue when you have either really young trees, like, you know, you just planted them, young shrubs, if you're using around annuals, those kind of things. So those new plants like that would be a real issue. So generally, we always say at least 3 months, compost the wood chip mulch first, then you're going to be fine. Then I wouldn't worry about it. It's great if you can get it at a place like a landscape recycling center or someplace where they've actually composted it, actively composted it, and it's been there for more than 3 months. And trees love that stuff. I just really, that's too bad that they really didn't like the stuff, because trees love that sort of different size particles, where it's partly composted and then a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger, because it's just like forested soil. If you go out in the forest, that's what you find. You find that kind of combination of things. So it's great around trees and shrubs. So I'm not sure I'd put it in a vegetable garden only because then you get the wood chips or whatever, but certainly using it as paths, that's fine. You know, I think it's a resource that we should be using. It's right in our own backyard, and just to go ahead and use it. I do have real problems with the ones that are actually meant, like cypress bark, or, you know, some of those are actually where they're actually cutting down trees for the wood chips. I have a real problem with that just environmentally, not so much for the plants, but in just an environmental issue with the plastic bags and shipping it in and actually taking down live trees just for the mulch itself. So there's environmental issues that way. But I think it's great stuff. I mean,
well, if that's basically the best choice is to buy a pre-bagged product, you're going to go down to the garden center and buy it.
Is that what you're
that's what you're choosing. I mean, yes. I mean, right. Not everybody probably can load up their pickup, go down to the yard waste place and load up the pickup. I mean, if what you're doing is to say, okay, I want to do this, but I have to go down to the garden center and buy it, is there a particular, so you would say if you had your choice of different kinds of products, you would at least say, well, I would say don't do cypress.
It is a big issue with cypress, only because they are cutting down trees mainly for just, it's not what I always thought it was, like the leftovers and stuff. It's not. They're really, for the most part, they're actually cutting down trees for it. So it seems like just a waste in my mind. So if you could go with, you know, either hardwood mulch or something else where it's not listed as that, I'm just not sure. When you buy the bag mulch, you often just don't have a choice. That's it. And that's all that's available. But if you can work out anything at the landscape recycling centers, or, you know, a lot of times the arborists and stuff, they, if you just tell and that you're interested and you have a place where you can maybe compost it for a couple of months or something, then go that route. You certainly can get them from even the power companies. Again, you'd want to make sure that it's composted first. Yeah. So there are a few options there, but obviously if you don't have a place to keep it and all that stuff. Although I think the Landscape Recycling Center is still doing that, where you actually buy a bucket, and then once you purchase that bucket, then you can go back and get mulch in the buckets. Obviously, if you need a lot,
that might
bucket
take
bucket
a lot of bucket loads. Yeah.
But if you don't need a whole lot, that's kind of a pretty good deal. So you may want to check with the Landscape Recycling Center near you to see if they have some kind of deals like that, or they do deliver.
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean, most of them do deliver, okay. So it might be another option for you. So,
all right. Let's take some other callers. Oak Forest, line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
The last couple of years, I've had a lot of problem with rust on my daylilies, even spreading to my iris. I basically kept it under control last year by spraying every 10 days to two.
Yeah.
But it goes over to my tomato plant. And I was afraid to spray them. What could I actually spray them so that I don't end up with half the leaves falling off?
On the tomatoes?
Yep.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if it's the same fungus. Usually they're pretty darn specific to a certain plant. So usually the rust that daylilies get is not going to be the same thing that tomatoes are going to get. So I doubt if it's the same disease.
So what would you say to spray the tomato plants with?
Well,
that doesn't make it dangerous to eat them. That's all I'm concerned about.
Right. And there are some fungicides that are labeled for vegetables, but probably the first thing would be to figure out what's going on with them so we can figure out then the proper thing to use. So are they just forming spots on the leaves? And then maybe that disease we were just talking about where they get leaf spots and...
Yeah, if they got leaves, that it would start out there with spots.
Right.
Eventually, they just fall off.
Right. So it's probably one of the leaf spot diseases, which is very, very typical for tomatoes to get. So the kinds of things we talked about before, just good air circulation, make sure you don't water them at night, keep the leaves dry. Make sure you spread them out so they're not getting too overgrown. Those kind of things can help. There are some fungicides, and actually there actually is one called Remedy that's actually a baking soda product that may help if you use it early enough. Probably the biggest thing with leaf spot disease is if you wait until that, oh my gosh, you know, a third of the plant is infested or has this disease, it may be too late to do a whole lot. So you really have to catch it early. So when those leaves, and they're generally always in the bottom leaves, they start turning, they get a few brown spots on them, and then the leaf will turn yellow, and then the whole leaf turns brown, but then it just hangs there. So get that out of there. Just remove it. Get that fungus out of there as best you can. And then there are some fungicides that are labeled for vegetables, and you can get those at pretty much any of the garden centers.
Could you just give me a couple names?
Probably the ones you're going to find are, as I said, Remedy might be one that you could use. I'm trying to think of, I don't know if I know a brand name. I think Bonide and Fertilome have a couple of them that are labeled for vegetables. It really kind of depends on where you're going to get them, but it'll say vegetable fungicide. There's a bunch of them out there.
Okay, it'll say vegetable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just make sure it says on the label that it's meant to be used for vegetables.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Very good. One more caller here, and this is Decatur on line three. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I have a blue spruce about 30 feet tall. It's long in the tooth. It's got a lot of bare limbs, not a lot of needles on the lower two-thirds. I'd like to get rid of it. I'd like to ask you what you would replace it with, some sort of a fir pine. Just a recommendation would be appreciated.
Yeah, is this in a windbreak or something, or is this?
No, it's just out in the front yard.
Okay, but it's big enough to have a big tree.
It's 30. It's 30, 40 feet or 30.
But there's plenty of space there for you.
Well,
I think that whole, you know, blue spruce have really, really taken a hit the last couple of years for a variety of reasons. So I think probably at this point I'd probably be looking at something like a Norway spruce.
Okay.
I think those are really good. And actually one of the diseases that blue spruce gets, Norway tends to be resistant to, so that's good.
Okay.
So that would be a good one. I actually like, now where are you located?
Indicator,
okay. You might even, you know, I don't know if you like the furs. The concolor furs are actually quite attractive. They have kind of a blue-green look to it that's very similar to blue spruce.
And what would be a good type to get? What type of fur?
Well, what's called a concolor. Concolor. Concolor fir. And that it's really is, it has that same kind of blue. It does. They don't like a lot of wind. So if you're in a really windy spot, that may not be a good one for you. But we've had really good success with those around, I know, around here as far as a nice. And it would give you that blue color again that you.
Well, I might pick up a little wind because I'm on the edge of town.
So you might kind of look, you know, look at the concolor firs, Norway spruces, actually Douglas firs are really pretty good.
Okay.
I like those. White spruce to some extent, they're going to get some of the diseases, blue spruce. So those might be a couple of them that I would look for. And even something like, I don't know if you like Canadian hemlocks, a little different look to them. Those would be good, too.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, right. Sure.
Well, we got to go at that point. Just want to mention real quick, we got an orchid show coming up this weekend.
Yes, the orchid show. Central Illinois Orchid Society is having their orchid show at the Champaign Public Library this Saturday from 10 to 4. It's just a great opportunity to meet the members, find out more about orchids. And then March 10th, Danville, the Vermilion County Master Gardeners, are having their Garden Day workshop. March 10th, I'm giving a program there as well. And that's really another great opportunity to find out more about gardening and shop. There's going to be vendors there.
Oh, okay.
We love to shop as gardeners.
And of course, you can look forward to Sandy appearing now and again on, what is that show we call it now?
Mid-American Gardener.
Mid-American
and
Gardener.
And I'm actually hosting March 22nd. So
oh, okay. So that's Thursday nights at 7 on WILL-TV. Sandy is a horticulture educator with Champaign County Extension. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Dinner.